supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney is taking steps to have the city resume control of the public school system after 16 years of state oversight. Let's consider implications of today's announcement with WHYY education reporter Avi Wolfman-Arend. Avi, what happened today?
So Jim Kenney got up in front of the city council and gave a big stirring speech about how Philadelphia needs to take back control of its public schools. And what he means by that is that the SRC, the School Reform Commission, is going to go away. It's going to be replaced by a locally appointed board that he appoints and the city council approves. So let's just go quickly through the steps. This month, the SRC is going to vote to dissolve itself, most likely. Then the state secretary of education is going to approve that vote, most likely. And then starting next summer, July 1st, 2018, there's going to be a locally appointed school board in Philadelphia. And Kenny's rationale for this is that the city needs to take control of its own destiny. They've been sort of under the state's boot for too long and also kind of been passing the buck and saying it's the state's responsibility to run our public school system.
Again and again, we've told the people of Philadelphia that the state of their schools are someone else's responsibility. That ends today.
What does this mean for Philadelphia parents, teachers, students, administrators?
First of all, you can look to your mayor for a vision on what the schools could look like. And you can challenge your mayor about that stuff. But it also means the way Kenny designed it and crafted it in his speech was that Philadelphia is also going to be fiscally responsible more for its schools. It's not going to say, hey, where's the money, Harrisburg? It's going to step up to the plate. And Kenny said, essentially, like, help from Harrisburg isn't coming. This is our problem to solve now. And the district, we should note, faces a big looming deficit. It starts next year. It could grow to $1 billion by fiscal year 2022. So there is a big hole to fill, and Kenny is saying, look, we're the ones that have to fix this.
No matter how anyone may feel about it, that's the reality. To say otherwise would only push off the responsibility we all say we want with local control. So the final plan we will propose to meet the district needs will be difficult, and it will require everyone to pitch in. But the alternative is far worse.
It's very noble to move Harrisburg out of the equation. Where's the money going to come from?
Oh, that's a good question. So I should say there was a real contrast between what Kenny said. And then afterwards, we all, the press, talked with Daryl Clark, city council president. And his first thing was, hey, Harrisburg's not off the hook here. They still have a responsibility to fund our schools. That's how he started. So I asked council president, I said, are you open to the idea of raising taxes? And this is what he told me.
You must be new. You know, I don't ever answer a tax vote until I have to actually vote. Well, we haven't even gone through a budget process.
So basically saying, don't ask me about that yet. And it's funny, I'm not new, but it's true that when you're an education reporter in the city, you don't deal a lot with city council. That's going to change a lot now. City council is going to have a much larger say in what goes on in the Philadelphia schools. In fairness, I did follow up with some other council people, Councilwoman Maria Quinones Sanchez, for instance, and she said, look, everything's on the table.
Any other big takeaways today?
You know, this wasn't like a detailed in-the-weeds policy speech from Mayor Kenney. This was more sort of a rousing, let's take back our schools type of speech. He did talk about, for instance, trying to get beyond the traditional charter school versus traditional public school feud that's cast a pall, I think, over school debates for the last 20 years. That's easier said than done. But I think big picture, what Kenny's saying here is I want to take responsibility. I want to put my political equity and capital in the schools of our city. They're the most important thing to determining the future vitality of our city. Let's do this together. We have the ability to do it.
Is it in part because he's accumulated a well of goodwill that he can stake his claim on this?
You know, this is a big political gamble. It is easier in a lot of ways for the mayor just to be able to say it's the SRC's problem, it's Harrisburg's problem. And Kenny was always kind of tepid on this notion of should we take back control of our schools. This wasn't like a big banner issue for him. And something's changed. And he's saying, I want responsibility for this. The city wants responsibility for this.
Was there a counter argument to keep some semblance of the SRC in place, or had that body pretty much run its course?
locally it had run its course. And even when we've had some conversations with folks in Harrisburg, they're not pounding the drum saying keep the SRC. I think a lot of people realize that just there was so much grassroots momentum to get rid of the SRC that there isn't a whole lot of resistance here. The resistance will come when we get to the details of how do you raise the money? You know, what decisions do you make on charter schools and public schools and closing schools? When those hard decisions come about, then this mayor and the new school board is going to get thrown into the fire. Right now, I think there's just a lot of hand slapping and congratulations on all sides.
Thanks, Avi.
Thanks, Dave.
WHYY education reporter Avi Wolfman-Arendt on Newsworks Tonight. Come Tuesday, Pennsylvanians will elect 7 judges to statewide appellate courts, and that includes the state Supreme Court. WHYY's Dave Davies looked into who's funding their campaigns and some of the messages the cash is bankrolling.
Voters will pick 1 justice for the Supreme Court, 2 members of Commonwealth Court, which hears cases involving government policy, and 4 judges for Superior Court, which hears appeals in criminal and civil cases.
The fundamental problem is that the voters will know precious little about these candidates. In many cases, they won't even recognize their name.
That's Franklin and Marshall analyst Terry Madonna. Since it's hard to get voters acquainted with candidates, the political parties look for simple, straightforward messages to push their slates, like this one.
Angry about Donald Trump? Trump threatens our civil rights. Vote for judges to protect our rights. Send Trump a message. Vote for the Democrats.
That ad is filled with images of President Trump and mentions his name 3 times in 15 seconds. Republicans say it's a cheap gimmick for Democrats to run against Trump rather than compare the candidates and their qualifications. In the marquee race for Supreme Court, Republican candidate Sally Mundy has a big lead in fundraising. She also has the advantage of incumbency. She was appointed by Governor Tom Wolf to finish the term of Michael Aiken, and she's rated highly recommended by the bar. Many Republican ads don't even mention party affiliation, but they do have some targeted partisan messages. One mailing that features an image of a military salute plays on the controversy over athletes protesting during the national anthem. The headline reads,
"Vote for judges who share our values and stand for the flag. Vote Republican."
That drew a sharp rebuke from Daniel Seisler, who earned a Bronze Star in Afghanistan serving in Army intelligence and is managing his mother, Democrat Ellen Seisler's campaign for Commonwealth Court.
"I didn't risk my life in Afghanistan to have Republican judges question my mom's patriotism. Judges should be better than this."
The Democratic candidate for Supreme Court, Dwayne Woodruff, is a former Pittsburgh Steeler and a common pleas court judge, rated recommended by the bar. He's struggled to raise the money to compete with Mundy. Candidates for the 7 appellate judgeships have raised about $4 million since June, according to campaign finance reports. Half of that came in checks of $10,000 or more. Who are the big contributors? Madonna says, who do you think?
"A disproportionate amount comes from organizations and individuals who have, in some respects, a vested interest in more ways than one about the outcome."
By far the biggest donor is the Trial Lawyers Association of Philadelphia. The group's PAC, the Committee for a Better Tomorrow, gave nearly $1 million. They typically favor Democrats, but in this year's Supreme Court race, they've snubbed the Democrat Woodruff and pumped $150,000 into the Republican Mundy's campaign. They say they like her qualifications. It probably didn't hurt that her husband is a former president of the Pennsylvania Trial Lawyers Association. Building trades unions contributed more than $400,000, most of it to Democrats, because they want judges sensitive to their members' needs. Sometimes a personal connection can mean a lot. Bob Asher is a Montgomery County fundraiser. His committee, the Pennsylvania Future Fund, helped a lot of Republicans, but gave more than $200,000 to Commonwealth Court candidate Paul Lally. Any particular reason?
Yeah, I'm his finance chairman because his dad is my best friend and his mom, and we've known each other forever, and I knew Paul growing up. And so when he asked me, I was honored to do that.
One thing that hasn't appeared in this campaign is outside spending from national groups like the Koch brothers or George Soros. It's a homegrown Pennsylvania fight, and it's over Tuesday. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Around 12,000 people in Pennsylvania have listed dwellings on the home-sharing site Airbnb. The site's Andrew Kollek says that those homes are increasingly located outside of major cities.
Suburban hosts are one of our fastest growing populations, faster even than urban areas in the United States.
Though home sharing and homeowners associations don't always go together. WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports that tensions over rentals outside of Philadelphia has led to falling outs and new regulations in some communities.
During the golden hours of late afternoon, the kids are out in Buckingham Forest, a planned community in Bucks County. Some roam on bikes and scooters. One girl nearly mows me down on the sidewalk.
I'll get out of your way.
Thank you.
Others, wearing ballet tights or football pads, load into waiting SUVs that spirit them away to practice. The houses for sale here are all listed north of $500,000. Mercedes and Teslas share the road with Fords and Toyotas, and a lot of lawn care trucks. Donna Roggio says she was one of the first people to buy land in this development.
At the peak of the market, we bought the house. I bought it as an investment. So I spend all this money on this house, and then my life changes.
She and her ex-husband split up. Roggio and her teenage daughter, Riley, stayed in the four-bedroom house. When she couldn't sell the property, which overlooks a picturesque dip in the landscape, she listed it on Airbnb for $225 a night. Sitting at the computer in her home office, she shows me the people she's hosted.
I had somebody come for a 30th birthday that they grew up going to Peddler's Village. They wanted to take their boyfriend to Peddler's
There's a few hotels in Doylestown to the west, and the river towns like New Hope to the east and north. But Roggio says she had no trouble finding guests.
I had a family from Ireland coming in to stay for their brother-in-law's wedding. I had a family from China.
She says the money helped cover her mortgage. After a few months, she left to visit her new fiancé, who lives in Hamburg, Germany. When she came back, she found a cease and desist letter from the township in her mailbox.
So then I had to cancel 1, 2, 3, 4 people. I think it was close to $5,000, $4,000 or $5,000. Yeah, it's a ton of money for me. It's a ton of money for anybody.
Her next door neighbor, Frank Jonas, and another person in the neighborhood had gone to a township supervisors meeting and complained about people renting on Airbnb. They didn't want to be interviewed for this story, but township attorney Craig Smith sums up their complaints.
That's not what they purchased. They fear it's going to decrease house prices. They fear that their children are going to be running around when there's strangers.
And he says it shatters expectations of what's allowed in their neighborhood. But Buckingham, like other towns across the country, had stumbled into a legal gray area. Andrew Kalick crafts public policy for Airbnb and says existing laws restricting hotels or boarding houses often don't apply to his company.
If you have a yard sale in your house, it doesn't automatically turn your house into a shopping center.
So far, Pennsylvania courts agree. Three times homeowners in the state, all in the Poconos, have appealed orders from their municipalities to stop renting online. All won. But some local officials worry it's a slippery slope that could lead people to buy properties in residential areas just to turn them into short-term rental businesses, which has happened in Philadelphia. That's pushed township lawyers like Craig Smith to tighten their laws. To the north, Tinicum Township is doing the same after neighbors complained about houses near the Delaware River rented out for raucous parties. In New Jersey, some lawmakers introduced a bill to help towns restrict home sharing. These regulations may be slowing the growth of Airbnb, according to a survey by the Swiss bank UBS. For Donna Roggio, they soured what was once a pleasant community. She says she hasn't talked to the neighbor who complained in more than a year.
Because you feel like you're friends with them because you barbecue with them, you cut their kids' hair, you know, and then you realize, and the response that I got back was, you need to take this up with the township. This isn't about us. This is about the code.
But after several months off of Airbnb, she is sharing her home again. Roggio went to the township and demanded to know how long was a short-term rental. Eventually, they told her 3 months. Online, Roggio found Elena Gisu, a divorced mom of two, who needed a place for her family to stay while the townhouse they're moving into is built. She says she had some reservations about living with a stranger.
And I thought it was going to be so weird because I haven't had a roommate since college. I mean, I don't really consider my ex-husband my roommate.
But Gisu says it's worked well for her family. By the time they move out at the end of the year, the township may have passed new rules barring Rogio or anyone else from taking in short-term renters. Her frustration is audible.
It's podunk. It's like all these things are changing. It's like the fear. Like, people are so fearful.
She hopes the regulations work for both sides, people who want to rent and people who want to make sure strangers in their neighborhood are vetted. Rogio may not stick around to find out. The plan is to eventually join her fiancé in Germany. Even there, cities like Berlin have banned Airbnb. Laura Benchoff, WHYY News.
Attendees at the Fairmount Waterworks in the shadow of the Philadelphia Museum of Art can take in a performance Saturday, marrying the legacy of the city's watershed and the contribution of linguistic diversity and social inclusiveness toward managing a healthy environment as well as society. Joining me in conversation is artist and choreographer David Brick, who created and will perform in Island of Signs. David, thanks for being here on Newsworks Tonight.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it sounds at first glance rather complicated, but it is part and parcel of what you do as co-director of Headlong. Describe that organization and its work.
Headlong is a platform for performance and art research. We incubate a lot of artistic projects in the city. We have a lot of artists who we support. We have a performance institute. People come from all over and study with us. And then Headlong has work that we produce under our own names as well.
So how specifically will art, social justice, and performance be in evidence Saturday?
So the performance on Saturday is a co-production with Philadelphia Contemporary, and it's a part of a larger year-and-a-half-long residency that Headlong has had at the Washington Avenue Pier. It's a performance and a set of participatory events. And so we do the Quiet Circus there every Saturday. And then the River Charrettes is an outgrowth of that. And we've done these River Charrettes at a number of sites along Philadelphia rivers. And this last River Charrette is at the Fairmount Waterworks. And I'm performing a duet with my mother, who is 79 years old. She's deaf. This project has to do with ways of seeing and ways of seeing each other as human beings without projecting a lot of assumptions onto them.
So, David, given your mother's background, does the word signs in Island of Signs also refer to sign language?
That's right. Island of Signs is performed in two languages, a language available to people who can hear and a language that is American Sign Language. And we try not to have any moments in this piece where one language is interpreted into the other language. So it's almost two parallel pieces happening at the same time with similar content. But Carolyn, my mother, and I felt that we didn't want anybody in the audience to get information secondhand. And so in some ways, this piece is an exploration of that problem. The hearing people will spend some time immersed in a language they might not be able to literally understand, which is similar to what deaf people are always going through, what immigrants to this culture are often going through. So the piece actually alternates between American Sign Language and spoken English, and sometimes we type onto a large video screen so that everyone can understand what we're saying at the same time.
That the performance will be taking place inside the historic Kelly Pool, is that also by design to in part compromise or muffle sound?
That is exactly right. There's a delicate relationship between all of this piece, the larger work, the Quiet Circus, trying to wrap its arms around kind of everything about our lives in Philadelphia, the waterways, issues, social issues, and our actual lives here. But one of the beautiful things about this very riveting space, this old underground pool, is that sound is very muffled and sounds like you're underwater in a lot of ways. And, you know, the river, of course, is running right by, you know, just a few feet away from you as you're in this underground space. So, yeah, that watery environment is, it works beautifully for the sense of a kind of muffled deafness.
David, thank you in turn for helping us wrap our arms and heads around the complex diagram of this city. Good luck on Saturday.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Artist and choreographer David Brick on Newsworks Tonight. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller, Newsworks Tonight.